It's like they, hit clean. It's, just a matter of getting back up and focus on the next shift. And at the same time, maybe I can do a better job not to put myself in a situation to allow to get hit. But they're a big team, and they like to play physical. But I'm feeling good, and I'm excited for tomorrow's game.
Nick Hjalmarsson, as they call him on this show. Nicholas Hjalmarsson, the Blackhawks standout defenseman, good old number 4. We'll get you ready for Game 6 tonight at the United Center. Sports Talk live on CSN at 5:30. I'll be alongside the one and only David Haugh.
Who else is on that show tonight?
I don't know.
Hockey panel again? We got some...
Laz good, and Cookie?
I don't know. Might be mix it up a little bit. Are we changing lines tonight like Joe Quenneville?
We're changing lines.
We're going to go to somebody we haven't used since November, like Joe Quenneville might?
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge risk when we talk about the possibility of Joe Quenneville turning to Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who hasn't played since November. Now, as I wrote this, I think it made one of the additions Sunday. I'm not sure which one. Trevor Van Riemsdyk, his health history, when Derrick Rose looks at it, he feels lucky.
Yeah, this guy's been just...
This guy had, now since January of 2014, when he was a member of the New Hampshire hockey team.
The Nighthawks?
I don't know. What's New Hampshire?
The University of New Hampshire.
Yes, the University of New Hampshire.
I got to think.
I'm not sure. The insurance men. I'm not sure.
Insurance men.
He broke his ankle. Mm-hmm. Pretty gruesome injury. Then he fights his way back. He's the surprise of training camp.
Yep.
Gets back. He's an undrafted guy, I believe. Signed by the Hawks.
That's correct. Brother of James Van Riemsdyk.
He has a puck hit him in the kneecap.
Shatters
his kneecap in November.
Yep.
He was playing very well at the time. Goes on the shelf, surgery required.
3 months.
3 months. Comes back. They have high hopes for Trevor Van Riemsdyk because he got to play against his brother this year, JVR, in Toronto. He hurts his wrist. Requires surgery. So now he's out again. 3 surgeries since January 2014. Now, here we are, game 6, do or die. Now or never. And the Blackhawks might be saying, hey, TVR, need you. You go replace the old guy. Go skate on the blue line. Help us out. The timing, the pace, is this a really good idea? I don't know.
You watch Kimmo Tiimonen play?
I think I almost go back to what you suggested at the beginning of the
Rundblad
show.
Rundblad?
Maybe David Rundblad is a better alternative because at least he's been exposed to this kind of pace. Because if you're not, as Christopher Stieg pointed out, it's like you're in the middle of a speedway. And all of a sudden, the cars are going by and you're just afraid of getting
TVR's hit. TVR's going to get on the ice and go, whoa!
Whoa!
Was that the other cars? Remember Ricky Bobby?
I'm not in Rockford anymore.
Jeez.
And it'd be a desperate move. These are desperate times. They call for desperate measures, as they say. But I don't know that I would be that desperate. I'm not sure. Do you trust Joe Quenneville? Did anything that happened in Game 3 diminish your trust in
Joe
Quenneville?
No, he gave me 2 cups.
You trust him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody's going to be perfect.
No, I know.
Theo traded, Roosevelt Colvin, Tyler Colvin for that Goofy and Stewart and then re-signed him. Everybody makes a mistake.
You're right. Valid. Let's go to the calls. Kenny in Villa Park has a very good point about Corey Crawford.
Kenneth, good morning there, you rock star.
How you doing there, guys?
Good.
I'm enjoying myself here at USC. I just had a kidney transplant. Doing fantastic.
God bless you.
Oh, God bless him. Anyway, I got a great series, by the way, with both teams win or lose. And I just had a quick suggestion. I mean, thinking of Joe Quenneville and possibly putting one of the freshest, players on the ice, and we're fortunate.
Don't go there. Don't go there, Kenny. I know where you're going. Don't go there.
I know. And Crawford's doing great. What I'm saying is, this is like the Major League Baseball. They start out with their starter, bring a reliever in. Then put Crawford back into Game 7. Okay, you're not benching him. You're just giving him a break.
So your season comes down to staying alive tonight, and you're going to play a guy who hadn't played in 3 weeks.
No.
Who you had no plans on using this season until he played well at training camp, was in the minor leagues. You're going to put Scott Darling in to save your season, and then if he does it, you're taking him out to put another guy back in. No shot.
No, Kenny, I'm not with you there.
That would foobar this season.
He'd be the quickest player on the ice. He'd be faster than the forwards for the Ducks.
I don't know, Kenny. I don't agree with that.
No way.
Thanks for the phone
call,
though.
Kenny, thanks. Stay healthy,
buddy.
So
tell me this, Cap, though.
Okay, guys.
Tell me this.
See you, pal.
So you probably weren't standing up the other night yet. You're probably sitting down watching this happen. But when you were watching the Ducks take a 3-0 lead in the first period against the Hawks, did you say to anyone in the vicinity, where are you watching, at home?
At home.
Okay, it's time for Scott Darling.
No.
Did you think it?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
not. Did you think it?
We talked about it. I was watching the game with Mindy and with Garrett, and I think Mindy said, are they going to get Crawford out of the net? She was all mad. I said, no. First of all, those goals are not his fault. A. B. No. We don't need any of that nonsense. And then I go to watch the between periods, and Keith Jones was like, I'd take Crawford out right now, rest him, and get him ready for game 6. And Milbury, normally not the voice of reason, says, settle down. Let's see who gets the next goal. I would keep him in there. Until if it got to 4-0, I would change.
But it was a valid discussion at the time. I mean, you've seen it happen before. You don't know what it would have been done to Corey Crawford's confidence, although, you know, his confidence has taken worse beatings. So,
yeah, like getting benched.
Yeah, no kidding. So I don't know. But it was something that to be, you know, worthy of discussion at the time. I'm glad. I think they did the right thing in staying with Crawford. He was good later. That last goal, the game winner, you couldn't really do anything about. I don't think so. I mean, really, what are you going to do? It was a tough rush, and he was, you know, it was so dramatic too. Though after Bolesky scored, he goes tumbling over, slides on his back, and Crawford's prone the other way. I don't know. Tonight, though, he's got to be at his best. This has got to be a goalie win and go to game 7, take your chances. I just don't know if going to TVR is I don't.
You're saying goalie win, and I agree. He's got to come up big.
Yeah.
To me, it's on the defensive core, including the forwards, back-checking, that they limit Anaheim's opportunities.
They've got to limit their opportunities. You have to get slow down. You can't let Getzlaff and Corey Perry take
over. You cannot have Thiemann in there pinching.
No.
And all of a sudden you go, whoa, they're going the other way. And he needs a golf cart to catch him. No shot.
You know what my son suggested as a strategy for the Blackhawks? Dress Carcillo, have him start a fight with Corey Perry, and get them both ejected.
That'd be phenomenal.
That's not going to happen.
No.
He can't stand Corey Perry like a lot of Hawks fans. Thinks that he's the
He's an agitator.
Yeah,
he's a great player.
He's definitely gotten under the skin of Hawks fans, Hawks players, Hawks Nation. But he is very good.
Very good player.
Getzlaff doesn't bother you so much. I think you respect him. Kind of the whole
He doesn't annoy comparison. Me. He's just a good player.
Yeah.
Corey Perry's a little jerk.
Besides Perry, though, they're not an easy team to dislike. Even their coach, Bruce Boudreau, was just a funny guy.
Yeah.
You know, after the game, he was calking in after the overtime victory on, was that Monday night? And somebody asked him, and, you know, so what'd you say during the intermission? Or after you guys blow the lead? Oh, I told him stop pouting, basically. Or, you know, I don't know if he said pouting. Here, okay, this is what Bruce Boudreau said Monday night late after the Ducks blew the lead and the Hawks took them in overtime.
I said, it's our turn. I said, don't be upset and hang your heads. Get angry. Get just really mad that we sort of pissed it away a little bit. And just come back and play the way you did in the first period. Things will work out.
And a couple other players were like, basically said, stop pouting. You got to start playing. And you like that approach. He's an entertaining guy. This is not an easy team to hate.
Yeah, they're not like Vancouver to me.
No, there's none of that. Or St. Louis.
Or the old rivalry with the Red Wings.
Yeah, I don't find the Ducks easy to, you know, build up that sort of venomous reaction from Hawks fans. I get tired of those orange towels. I mean, that place just... And that's
think they like the red ones
it's
here.
It's a little annoying. Well, do they have red ones every game?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, okay. I don't pay as much. I think I'm more used to that.
You're not waving one in the press box?
No, I'm not waving one. No.
I can promise you I am. Not in the
not
press
in the press box.
No.
You've been up to the Hawks press box before?
I have before, but not this season.
Get some food?
No.
Give Eddie O a hug. He's going to be there tonight. Looking forward to that.
Edzo and Doc on the call.
He's been doing a great job going back and forth. You know, he did a great job on the Tampa Bay and Rangers game last
night.
I'm
hoping we get them on again, Edzo and Doc, you and I, on Sports Talk Live. That was awesome.
That was fun. That was almost a week ago. My goodness, this month, where has it gone?
Yeah, that was what, last?
Last Thursday.
Thursday. Crazy. All right, take a time out. Mark Gonzalez, pride and joy of Southern California, Cubs beat writer for the Tribune, joins us next.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
We don't know you. How many cures do you have in your manager? I mean, if you're a big truck of some sort, how many gears do you have?
I have a 6-speed Tremec out there in my Chevelle, and it's the smoothest shifting transmission I've ever experienced in my life. I want to be a 6-speed Tremec if I can.
Okay, what was the question?
How many gears do you have as a manager if you were a truck?
I've got a 6-speed Tremec in my Chevelle. Joe's a car guy.
Yeah. I guess that's a question you ask a car guy. I don't know that I've ever heard Mark Gonzalez ask a question quite in that way.
Absolutely not. Now, maybe when he was cheerleading for USC, that's possibly different. Mark Gonzalez joins us now. Gonzo, good morning. How are you there, buddy?
God, I was just on this website for the USC bookstore for some stuff. You need anything?
Yeah, absolutely. They have any
What's up, Gonzo?
O'Neal Zone t-shirts left?
I think pretty soon they might have the Enfield Zone t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Let's talk about this team. There's a different buzz around the Cubs, obviously, because they've won. But we haven't seen this probably since the 08 season when people got just jacked and you feel like something special is going on. Agreed?
Agreed. I think last night was another step in the direction they want to be headed, not just because they beat a very, very, very good team, but the fact that the youngsters came through a late-inning situation and they acted in the way you would think a veteran would. Just like, hey, we won, but got another tough game tomorrow with Scherzer. We're going to give it our best. We're going to enjoy this one, but still work ahead. And I think that's kind of the mission that Joe has sent throughout the organization.
You know, Gonzo, I think that everybody's well aware of the Anthony Rizzo sort of emerging as a leader, and some people mentioned after the 6 RBI game an MVP candidate. I think, obviously, Chris Bryant's ascension has been well documented, and it goes without saying the impact he's had. But how would you describe what Addison Russell has done? Because here's a guy with already 11 doubles. He has a walk-off hit last night. I just think he has been a steadying influence in a more quieter way. And I think he has been someone who has, as you point out, behaved like a veteran. And so you sometimes overlook all the different ways he contributes.
Yeah, you know, last weekend in Arizona, he didn't have the greatest performance at second base. You saw some rough times with footwork. I think there was a fielding error then, and you thought, uh-oh, is he suited for second base? But then these last two games, he's made spectacular plays behind the bag, gotten up and fired the throw to get the guy out, turned a couple double plays. You see growth in this kid, and you forget that he's played second base full-time for only 5-6 weeks. And when a kid improves like that, you got to think he's only going to get better. And I think it's a tribute to him, as well as Gary Jones, the coach who is going to be out there early today working with him on second base and finding ways to get better. And I think that's a testament to this organization and the kids wanting to improve.
What's your take on the pitching matchup tonight? I mean, this is such a great national stage. Max Scherzer, John Lester, the two highest-paid guys in the offseason in free agency from a pitching perspective. What are you expecting to see tonight?
I'm kind of curious to see how the Cub hitters are able to try to jack up Scherzer's pitch count. And Scherzer's been even more red-hot than Lester at this point. And Scherzer, as we all know, was the marquee free agent out there. I'm sure the Cubs are satisfied with Lester, and rightfully so. But Scherzer's a guy that's been deluxe. And last couple of years, you can make an argument that he was the better pitcher than Verlander on that staff. I'm expecting a terrific game. You know, one thing about the Nationals, they're a very good team, but they haven't had two of their better players out there, Worth and Rendon, but you got to beat them when you play them, and the Cubs took care of business yesterday.
So, Mark, you've been out there for the whole Chris Bryant and Bryce Harper comparisons, the joint interview they did yesterday I thought was interesting, and just in the contrast in styles, which we've talked about and people have written about. It's small sample size, but he's only been up for a little bit over a month or so. But in terms of the Chris Bryant persona, is what you see what you get, or is there a side of him that basically, that there is a maybe, can anybody be this good? Have you seen any sort of chinks in the armor? Because otherwise, what he has shown so far is not only as productive as he's been on the field or at the plate, but this is a guy who handles his business professionally and is, by all accounts, one of the more likable guys that anybody's encountered.
The funny thing, you bring that up, is usually when a rookie comes up, regardless of how good or how suspect he is, there's usually a hazing period. But the veterans in this organization have really taken to him and Russell and any other kid that comes up with open arms. I'm sure sometimes there'll be a little bit of hazing, whether it be the costumes the rookies have to dress up on a trip. But the veterans have really welcomed these guys, and therefore they've played up here with a comfort. And I think that goes a long ways. I think it's always good for a laugh. Remember last year Soler dressed up as Superman? It was a good laugh. But I think really the veterans realize just how good these guys are, and more important, they're not cocky. They know they're good, but they're not cocky. And I think they know they have to put the work in, and it all meshes very well.
Mark Gonzalez, Chicago Tribune, Cubs beat writer, is with us here on Cap and Haw. Look, Gonzo, I know the stat heads, the analytical geeks all out there go, manager's worth maybe three games, five max. I don't buy that. I think it's bunk because, maybe Joe Maddon will tinker with the lineup and make a bunt here and a move there, and they win three more games than they should have won. But you can't tell me that the culture in the locker room isn't radically different with him in charge versus Dale Swaim or Ricky Renteria, no disrespect to either guy, and that to me has a far bigger impact than three games. Agree or disagree?
I can't argue with you on that one, because it's just a vibe there where everybody looks forward to coming in the park every day, whether it be to talk to your teammates or get the work in. There's a very positive vibe, and this is all during a time when the place is all dug up. There's a lot of construction out there. There's could be some traffic concerns just going through some gravel and all that. But these guys have really postponed all that bad vibe or just that any distractions around them. And I think that was set partly in spring training when Theo and Jed talked to these guys, saying, "Listen, there's going to be some construction work going on. Just deal with it. It'll be nice in the end." And I think so far the players have taken to that.
So yesterday, Gonzo, take us to the interview process or the session with Jason McLeod, because he was talking about, obviously, the upcoming Major League draft, which the Cubs have a high pick, and obviously a lot of attention focused on that. But when Javi Baez's future was addressed, he was pressed on the idea that Javi Baez might be tried in the outfield. Where did that originate, and how likely is that to happen?
Well, I think it goes back to maybe a month ago when our Paul Sullivan asked him about it. I think it was Theo about it. Theo said no. And I think there are a couple of things to look at. One is there's a log jam of good outfielders at the Double-A level. They also have guys like Caesar and Junior Lake who contribute in some form, certainly not with the upside of Javi, but you look at Starlin at short. Russell looks like he's going to improve at second, so you kind of ask, where does Javi all fit? But on the other hand, Javi's great value is in the middle infield, so why not keep him there? He's made 11 errors in, I believe, 22 games. Might be some areas for him to shore up at. I think you don't want to commit and move him around yet, because there's a lot of balls in play right now as it relates to the future of the Cubs and how they intend to improve. And I think Jason was very forthcoming, very honest and candid when assessing Javi's future right now.
Gonzo, do you believe that when you put your laptop up for the night and go to bed on July 31st, the Cubs are A, in the race, B, they've made one or more moves of major substance? I'm not talking about plucking some guy's 24th man. I'm talking about they made a big move, whether that's Cole Hamels or whoever it is, do you think they do something like that this year?
As long as they're in contention, I do believe so. And there's one thing to keep in mind is that with a second wild card, once you get in, you know,
you never know.
Happen. We've seen that with the Giants and Royals last year. So I expect them to make a significant move by July 31st.
Where are you with Starlin Castro? How has he handled the speculation that has not been any, you know, he's no stranger to it because he's always been a guy that's been either, you know, rumored to be on the move or, you know, other teams would like to talk about. Where would you advise the Cubs to, you know, think in terms of his availability?
Well, I think he's been immune to any of the talk. I think he's got his, you know, other issues on the field to deal with at this point, namely hitting with runners in scoring position. He's had a rough May. He had a great start in April, but he's had a rough May. You also factor in the errors, that a lot of them are correctable errors. As far as the Cubs concern and whether they move him or not, I think they're going to have to win with him at this point. I think his bat, we've seen him go up and down quite a bit, and you just hope that he hits a hot streak and starts hitting with runners in scoring position as he did in April. And I'm not sure if you move him off shortstop what his value is. You know, he doesn't hit many home runs. He doesn't steal as many bases as he did in the past. So you just have to rely on him as being getting back to being a clutch hitter.
Gonzo, appreciate the knowledge coming out there tonight to do post with Holly. And I actually am going to sit in the stands to watch this pitching matchup tonight. I can't wait to watch Scherzer against John Lester.
It's going to be a good matchup, I hope, anyway. Scherzer, I think White Sox fans saw from his days in Detroit. I mean, this guy's deluxe.
And how about this story? I was told this by an executive that when Josh Burns was the GM in Arizona, his team doctor, he met with him after taking the job,
yeah,
and he met with him about all the players. And the doctor said to him, hey, we just checked out Max. You know, we had question marks when they drafted him. You need to move him now because he's going to blow out. He's got shaky medicals. You need to move him. So he trades him to Detroit in a deal for Ian Kennedy and whatever else he got back. Do you know that from that date till now, Max Scherzer, I don't think, has missed a start?
True story, and the Diamondbacks made some changes in the medical staff this year.
Interesting. Isn't that part of the reason the Cubs maybe stayed away during free agency?
They did not like his medicals from the draft, back in the draft when they were in Boston. Yeah, interesting. Gonzo, I'll see you tonight,
Thanks,
buddy.
Mark.
Take care, guys.
All right, take care. See ya. Right. There he is, the great Mark Gonzalez.
Gonzo knew that you were talking about with the Diamondbacks. He's still got some people back there in Arizona.
He's got ties back to the Pac-12.
Because he covered the Diamondbacks, too, for the Arizona Republic.
And how about that? They made changes in the medical staff. That's a pretty big
mistake, Cap. I mean, that's a pretty big miscalculation.
Yeah, we're going to give away one of the top five pitchers in the game.
But it's not without precedent. I mean, there's a lot of teams in every sport that have been wrong about medical projections.
But, you know, the White Sox had some indication maybe on John Danks. I mean, they signed him and he ends up blowing out.
Cap, Jerry Angelo didn't want to give Matt Forte a contract extension because of
his knees.
The medical reports from during the draft, pre-draft, of his knees. Yeah. And now look at him. He's a lot richer, more accomplished. And, you know, in retrospect, that was the wrong move to make. But everybody is going to project wrong once in a while. That's what makes sports fun to follow.
Hey, Matt in River North has a question for us.
Okay.
312-235-2525. Matthew in River North, what's going on there, buddy?
Hey, Matt.
Hey, fellas. I got a question and a comment. One, I'm dying to find out what's going on with Neil Ramirez because I think he's a better eighth-inning option than Pedro Strop. You know, I mean, he's got electric stuff. Two, my comment is, and Cap, I'm not going to hold you to this because you have mentioned it. How come nobody ever talks about how bad Tyler Flowers is defensively? Marty Brenneman was on when the Reds played the White Sox and said he's the worst defensive catcher he's seen in 35 years. I know a special assistant to the Royals general manager. He was my college baseball coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask, he scouts the White Sox a lot, and he tells me what he thinks of them. You know, he loves Sale, blah, blah, blah. I go, what's the issue? He goes, Tyler Flowers. He goes, he's a real disappointment. He goes, we know we could run him right out of the park.
Interesting. Plus, he's not doing enough at the plate to justify staying in the lineup. He's a source of a lot of Sox fans' ire. justifiably so, I think. He's been disappointing this year. That's a good question. I think that
it's
they probably
question.
Feel better with him than Giovanni Soto. That's probably
Soto's pedestrian guy.
Soto.
Matt, thanks, buddy.
Giovanni Soto.
Have a
thanks,
good
Matt.
Day. See you, pal.
Is that what you're saying there, Cap?
Soto.
Giovanni Soto?
He's okay. Just all right. The White Sox have some question marks. They have a hole at third. Connor Gillespie, no thank you. A hole at catcher. They got a good bullpen. They got a solid top three in their starting rotation when Rodon's in it, top four.
Maybe. I mean, you got to pitch. You got to perform.
Yeah, guys got to
perform.
Got
to live up to reputation.
Okay, Thibs.
Do your job. Speaking of Thibs, we should talk about him.
Let's talk about him when we come back.
All right.
All right, we'll talk Tom Thibodeau. That is next. This is Cap'n Haw on WGN Plus.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
Everyone has to do their job.
I don't mind them as a coach.
Who can set the court on fire?
Only the Bulls.
Keep us burning with desire.
Only the Bulls.
Who can bring another title here?
All right, welcome back. Cap'n Haw on WGN Plus and CSN Monday through Friday, 9 to noon.
Dancing optional.
Only the one and only.
I'm just glad you're sitting down rather than standing up.
All right.
Betting the Bulls' job is not vacant. Neither is Tom Thibodeau's.
How about
yet.
Double? Can I get that gig?
What's double?
Isn't that the guy in the furry bull suit?
I thought that was Benny.
No, they have Benny, but they have double, too.
Oh, I am not familiar with that mascot. I'm making my way around the mascots one at a time. Benny and I are good now. We're tight.
You're cool?
Yeah, we're cool.
You know who I'm tight with?
Nice
Tommy
guy.
Hawk.
I thought you were tight with Clark.
No, I've never met Clark.
You never met Clark? Not that you know of.
Mascot without
not,
pants,
not
I'm
that you
staying
know
away.
I was going to say, if you're that close to him, get him some pants.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Need some pants.
So what are the Bulls going to do?
Well,
here's the thing. Are you really going to – do you buy into this notion that they are that spiteful – that they're going to wait until every job is filled and then fire Tom Thibodeau?
Oh, I don't know. Jesus.
Do you think that...
Look, the relationship is beyond repair.
I have to tell you, though, Cap, I mean, knowing John Paxson, and this would have to be his call, right? I mean, this would be above Gar Forman even if you're going to wait that long. I just... Is he that spiteful?
Well,
is it that bad?
Okay. Both writers today, I'll take both of them and talk about it. Joe Colley. Player to Joe Colley, exclusive. Front office trash Thibodeau on exit interviews. If that's true, and I have no reason to doubt it, he's gone, dude.
Open season on Tom Thibodeau?
Open season.
Well, what does that mean? They are talking about the way that they, you know, the minutes he played them. I don't know. I think sometimes I don't want to diminish the rift or that the tension that exists there, but it's definitely it overstated at times too.
According to one Bulls player, exit interviews last week between the players and the front office turned into, quote, open season on Thibs. Upper management apparently had no problem making its displeasure with Coach Tom Thibodeau known by its line of questioning and the discussions it had with the players. I'd be shocked if Thibs is back, the player said. It hasn't stopped there either. According to a league source, Thibodeau thinks the Bulls do all they can to make sure he's not coaching in the NBA next season by letting the job vacancies fill up, then dismissing it with 2 years left on his deal. Okay, so what happens?
So play this out. So play that out.
Okay, so Orlando and... Denver.
Orlando is going to hire Scott Skiles, according to the reports.
Right. Orlando, Denver, New Orleans all fill their jobs. Minnesota, Flip Saunders says, I'm coming back. So there's nothing out there. They fire Thibs. We'll pay your money. Get out.
Mm-hmm.
Thibs lives in Chicago. He just travels around, maybe does a little media stuff, and waits. And all of a sudden.
He's 57 years old, right? Is he 57?
Is Thibs that old?
I think he's 57 years old. Do you really want to sit out a year right now at this stage of your career? You've waited so long.
He's put on weight, a lot of stress.
Okay.
Get a year to get healthy.
Okay. You want to work if you're a guy whose mantra is do your job. You want to work. If you're a workaholic, a year without basketball is a frightening possibility.
Yeah, he just turned 57.
Okay.
So let's assume that Thibs is out of work, okay? And the Cleveland Cavaliers in July decide, you know what? The heck with it.
This July?
Yeah.
Like in a month and a half?
Yeah.
The NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers?
Yeah. And they go, you know what? David Blatt, thanks. Here's your money.
That's nonsense. You're not going to fire a coach that won an NBA title. You're not going to fire a coach that got to the NBA finals.
LeBron gets what LeBron wants. If he wants
Thibodeau, LeBron's stupid.
I'm not disagreeing that David Blatt, if
he
wins the title.
I think David Blatt is assistant coach. I think that we saw during the Bulls series how maybe overmatched he can be. But you got to give a guy credit where credit is due. If they get to the NBA finals, which they are now.
Okay.
I don't know how you make that move.
Okay. Are you telling me that no other team in the NBA, nobody, would look in July or August and go, you know what? I was thinking if we got off to a slow start, I'd make a change. I'm making it now. We're going after Thibodeau.
I wouldn't discount that. I think that's plausible. What's your point?
So if that's what the Bulls management allegedly wants to do is wait till the jobs dry up, then fire him? That is not a guarantee that he won't be patrolling someone's sideline
okay.
in 2 months.
I know, but if you're the Bulls management, you are knowingly going down that road and consciously committing $9 million. $9 million. You're basically taking $9 million pile of money
and you're
torching it.
Right.
You're wasting it because you are so personally offended by the presence of this man who has won 65% of his games for you.
Correct.
That to me is unacceptable. Unacceptable, Brandon Marshall. Unacceptable. If I own this team and somebody's throwing $9 million away on a disagreement, a personal grudge, I cannot accept that.
And what if those
you have a responsibility as a general manager and a vice president to not waste my money.
Okay, and what if the owner is in concert with Gar and Pax, and the three of them have come to the decision that the franchise is better off, in their opinion, without Tom Thibodeau and the messy nonsense that went on all season long.
You don't want to be in, that's fine too.
Then what a
I'm
sad.
I'm in the circle. I love Thibs. You know that.
What a sad, sad state of affairs. And this is going to be, we talk about the kind of blemish that will last. This one will last. This one will last. If you're telling me that you're better off wasting $9 million on a coach to go away because you cannot possibly live with winning 65% of your basketball games with the roster that you have. And it's all about what? What did he do? Then I want to know, what did he do specifically? I want details. I want arrest reports. I want whatever it is
okay.
that he did.
And what if they say to you, look,
he's just a bad guy, just a personal disagreement.
He's going to get a gig. Whether it's later this summer or next year, we have offset language, so it's not going to cost us
$9
million.
Can you guarantee that? You just said the guy may need some time off. He needs to lose some weight. He needs to take care of himself. Maybe he likes being idle once he's idle. Maybe he finds that this year off is a good idea. Maybe he thinks this year off is a good idea. My point is you can guarantee nothing about Tom Thibodeau's employment future if you are the one that fires him. So you don't know that the offset language is going to be something that comes into play because you can't guarantee he's going to have a job again at the moment you fire him, which is why you don't fire him. Because I don't know that I'm in the business of throwing away $9 million. I don't feel that comfortable about it, especially for a coach that I am better with than without.
But what if you believe it won't be $9 million?
Again, that's what my point is. If you believe that, it's folly. What are you basing it on? Cap, I believe I'm going to win the lottery tomorrow, so I'm going to go buy $100 worth of tickets.
Folly-ish as, if that's a word, as Tom Thibodeau, what? Seventh winning another gig.
If you're so spiteful that you're firing this coach with 2 years left on his deal and you can't find a way, and it's that bad of a relationship, what is to say that Tom Thibodeau, in turn, isn't as spiteful and says, I'm not going to coach, so you can pay me to do nothing?
Yeah, I'm going to get healthy for 2 years.
I'm going to
do a little TV.
I'm going to go work at ESPN because, you know what, there's no offset language there. They're going to pay me $1 million to be their guy. And I'm going to take your $4.5 million and laugh all the way to the bank.
And I don't have any minutes restrictions there.
Nah. You don't know that if you're Reinsdorf, Paxton, or Foreman.
But if you're a franchise worth $1 billion or whatever the Bulls are worth,
yeah,
what is freaking $9 million?
Okay, then don't tell me that the luxury tax matters. Then go out and win a championship and stop crying about the luxury tax the next time that you don't want to sign a player to put you over the luxury tax. If you can throw away $9 million, you better win, and you better ignore the salary cap, Jerry Reinsdorf. Stop whining. If you're going to do this, then you better do that. Okay, that's what I'd say. It's ridiculous
Understood.
To me that this is really to the point where it is. You've got two people who were respected in the league on both sides, fine individuals, all of them. They're letting this personal difference get in the way of the professional success. I don't get it. I mean, I mean, everyone says it was the same thing, that they can't see Thibs coming back, and I understand that. Why? I just don't understand. Why they can't.
You don't understand how it got to this point.
Yeah.
Okay, but look around everyday life, and you have beautiful woman, beautiful looking guy. He makes a good living. She makes a good living. They have beautiful kids. They got a great house, and they're getting divorced.
Sports. We're not talking about family life.
It's the same thing.
No, we're not.
It's relationships.
No,
it's the same exact
sports.
Thing.
Sport. You can't tell me on one hand sports is a bottom line industry and then use relationship dynamics to justify getting rid of a coach that wins. You cannot do that, Cap. It's incompatible logic, and I'm not going to stand for it. Stop. Just stop. It's a bottom line business. It's winning is all that matters. Don't you know that, you stupid Hoosier? Okay, fine.
But
if it's bottom line logic, then you keep the best coach that you've ever had since Phil Jackson.
Okay, there.
You figure it out,
Mr. Man. I got something to combat you. You understood why Jim Harbaugh was forced out in San Francisco.
Harbaugh. Yeah.
It's the same exact set of circumstances.
I understand what happened. I think it's still foolhardy. Are you telling me that the clown they replaced him with, they're a better organization now? No, absolutely not.
I'm not saying
they're
that.
Better off with the eccentric, drive players to the brink of insanity head coach that Jim Harbaugh was and is than they are with whoever clown replaced them.
James Tom Sula?
Come with some knuckles.
Yeah, come with it all. Jim Harbaugh makes you a team that's more likely to win the Super Bowl
Agreed.
Than Jim Tom Sula or whoever it is that replaced him. That's ridiculous to me. Ridiculous. See, people want to have it both ways. They want to be all big and macho. Sports is all about the bottom line. Just win, baby. Okay. Well, just win, baby. Give me your head coach, even if you can't get along with them. Don't tell me, personal feelings are getting in the way of us winning. Save it, Cap. All right, rant over.
If you're going to go to the face,
come with some knuckles.
If you're going to go to the face,
come talk hockey again.
Come with some knuckles.
Let's get back to hockey. Hockey's a lot more pleasant to deal with.
All right, how about page two?
Oh, let's do page two. Let's talk about FIFA. Those crooks at FIFA.
Also, Joe Quenneville just moments ago said that David Rundblad could be in the lineup tonight.
Could be.
Could be.
Rundblad and Comiskey?
And Matt Forte has showed up at OTAs. Wonder if he wants to talk to me.
Smart move.
Martellus Bennett? None.
Wonder if he wants to talk to Dave Kaplan, journalist.
That's it.
It's right. Are you a journalist? Well, yes, I am.
Yes,
Matt.
Sir.
When,
yes,
when it suits me.
All right, then. Why don't you tell the truth? I do, Matt. Take a time out and do page dos. Page two, coming up.
Read all about it. We're desperate for stories.
And this one is so compelling.
This is page two.
All right, welcome back. Cap and Haw rolling on CSN and WGN Plus. I'll be off the next couple days. A little family trip.
All right.
For Brett's 21st birthday.
Yes, that's nice.
And you'll be in here with Jen Latta tomorrow.
So Jen is
joint gets a whole
in.
Lot better looking.
Isn't it going to? It definitely does that, just like it did yesterday with Brooke filling in. Jen will fill in tomorrow for you.
Yep.
And, boy, we could be talking about the end of a hockey season.
Could.
I don't think so, but it could be. That's how much rides on tonight. Imagine that.
crazy.
Anyway, all right, page two.
You want me to start?
Sure.
CS at Philly.com's Jim Salisbury talked to Philly's Jim Ruben Amaro about the Phillies' potential trades this summer as the club's going through a rebuild and about the development of some of the team's top prospects. When asked about the timetable for pitching prospects Aaron Nola and Zach Eflin to make it to the bigs, Amaro said the plan was to be conservative when it was pointed out to him that fans of losing teams tend to not like it when told they need to be patient. Amaro had this to say, quote, "They don't understand the game. They don't understand the process. There's a process. And then they bitch and complain because we don't have a plan. There's a plan in place, and we're sticking with the plan. We can't do what's best for the fan. We have to do what's best for the organization so the fan can reap the benefit of it later on. That's the truth." Update, Amaro said on Tuesday after being roundly criticized, "I'd like to apologize to the fans. The comments weren't meant to disparage the fans. I used my words poorly."
Wow. You get an apology. Good for him. You said the pitcher, the young pitcher they were, Zach
Eflin.
I loved him in High School Musical.
He was very good.
He was very good in that. Yeah.
Yeah, with Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah, definitely. She was very good too. All right, so the big national story, I guess international story today involves FIFA. Okay, FIFA. Seven high-ranking international soccer officials were arrested at a luxury hotel in Switzerland on Wednesday, part of a U.S. investigation into corruption into the sport's governing body. FIFA headquarters raided as part of a probe into bribes, corruption, how they awarded the 2018 and 2022 World Cups in Russia and Qatar, I believe. So far, they're still going to be held there. But what you see here is there's always been this whispering about how corrupt the process is. Very seldom do you see an act like this or a news story like this where actual criminal charges accompany.
And the one guy was handing out $40,000 in cash to each person on the committee to hear him out.
Unbelievable details
about
this.
How do we get on that committee? I'll listen to the guy. Well, talk to me all day.
There are seven openings now, but this is one of the few times that international soccer makes some headlines that people pay attention to when it's not a World Cup year. But FIFA officials, seven of them, arrested. And it's only going to they're going to get what's coming to them because I think the corruption is being rooted out by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
How about this? The Astros continue to roll. White Sox are going to be there this weekend.
Rodon's
Astros
pitching against them.
Become the first team in baseball to reach 30 wins with a 4-1 win over the Orioles on Tuesday night. They moved to 30-17 on the year. Cards also won their 30th. Astros got there first. But get this. If you go back to the start of the 2013 season, and if the Astros keep winning, they will give up this dubious distinction. The losingest team in baseball to date from the start of 2013 to today, the Houston Astros. They've obviously fixed it. The second, the Chicago White Sox. 13, 14, and into 15. The losingest team.
And the last two seasons started the same way this one did.
So when I call for Robin to be replaced, I'm not knee-jerk reactioning just what's going on the first 6 weeks or 7 weeks
Or reacting.
Whatever.
Reactioning, reacting.
Whatever.
One's a verb, one's made up.
Make up my own
words. Okay, that's a good one.
I'm not knee-jerk reactioning to what's going on this year.
Would you say that you foobarred that one?
Yeah, I foobarred that.
You foobarred that
No question.
Okay. No. Just clarifying.
Oh, the captionary.
And somebody actually tweeted me, what does foobar mean?
I used it like four times in the show.
No,
yesterday.
we don't need to.
We don't
I like that word.
It's good. It's good.
Effed up beyond all recognition.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. It's a family show.
So you got the losingest team potentially over a 3-year span. And I'm being reactionary?
Okay, so let me ask you this though, while we're on that topic again and we'll revisit it. But just the manager? Is it just the manager then? If this is an organizational issue,
no, you
how you
staff.
Draft Well, I mean, just the field staff? Isn't something going on? I mean, you know, isn't it directional? If this is talking about a 3-year sustained descent, it's more than just the manager, Cap. It's got to be deeper than that, I would think. It's been suggested that, at least. Interesting.
I mean, you got to look at everything.
How do you draft? What are you drafting? What are you evaluating?
It's not good.
Not good. Okay. So last night, we touched on this a little bit, but the Rangers back with a vengeance. Now, I made a statement before last night's Rangers game that I may live to regret, but I said to my son, who was the only one that until now that I basically said this. I said, well, he goes, what do you think about the Rangers and the Lightning? I said, well, I think that the teams that are trailing right now, 3-2 in the series, I think your Stanley Cup final is still going to be Blackhawks, Rangers.
Wow.
And I said it sort of just almost, you know, flippantly, like you're sitting there in your living room and you're just thinking off the top of your head. But I still feel like the Hawks can win this series, and I felt like the Rangers are what they were last night, a team that refuses to go away, a team that is, you know, realizes the urgency and responds accordingly. And they did. They have had a big 6-2 victory. I think it ended up 6-2. You give up six goals on home ice, and that's going to rattle. 7-3. Where am I getting 6-2 from? You have 7 goals.
Worry about your math classes, young man.
I don't know. I think the Rangers are going to end up winning that game 7, and who knows what's going to happen with the Hawks because that's been such a close series. But don't sleep on the Rangers. It's a very proud team, very deep team, and they're not done yet.
All right, did they go too far? In Morganza, Maryland, students protested Tuesday after learning some of their classmates will face discipline following a school prank at their St. Mary's County High School. Pranks committed by graduating seniors, nothing new, but at the Choptacon High School, the prank was certainly original and involved tens of thousands of ladybugs. Students released 72,000 ladybugs inside the school building last Wednesday night as their senior prank. School officials, police not laughing, some of the kids in legal trouble. 6 Choptacon senior students and 1 alum broke into the school at 3:30 a.m. Wednesday and released 72,000 ladybugs inside. Now they're facing criminal charges, 4 minors charged with 4th-degree burglary, property destruction, disruption of school activities. The other 3 will be charged as adults by criminal summons.
Can't they just happily TP the school grounds?
Yeah, 72,000 ladybugs might have gone over.
And breaking and entering at 3:30 in the morning, not a good idea.
Yes, Allison and David, we'd like to see you at school. No, Blair released 72,000 ladybugs in school.
No. I mean, he's at that age. I mean, he's not a senior, but he's in high school. Freshman, you don't want that to happen, right?
Not good.
How do you tell your kid not to break and enter at 3:30 in the morning? You shouldn't have to tell your kid not to break and enter at 3:30 in the morning.
They do stupid things.
They should just know that.
No question. All right, we are out of here. Back tomorrow will be David Hahn, Jen Latta.
That's right.
I'll see you Monday.
Have a great trip.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. You guys be good. Have a great weekend. Later.
All right. Well, see you later.